Okay, so we continue reading from Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam, and we're in the story of King Puranjana that Narada Muni is telling to our good Vedic king, King Prachina Varishad. And the chapter is chapter 26. King Puranjana goes to the forest to hunt. So we have verse 23 up there. I hope you see some of the poetry in here. Even if you don't know the meaning, there's a lot of nice alliteration. You had vrida vilamba vilasadha sitava lokam, you get the va, that's repeated. Anyway, well, it's of course appropriate since King Puranjana is addressing his queen, and so he's speaking to her very beautifully, very affectionately, in very beautiful words. So her translation: my dear wife, your teeth are very beautifully set, and your attractive features make you appear very thoughtful. Kindly give up your anger, be merciful upon me, and please smile upon me with loving attachment. When I see a smile on your beautiful face, and when I see your hair, which is as beautiful as the color blue, and see your raised nose, and hear your sweet talk, you will become more beautiful to me, and thus attract me and oblige me. You're my most respected mistress. Purport. An effeminate husband, simply being attracted by the external beauty of his wife, tries to become her most obedient servant. Sri Pada Shankaracharya has therefore advised that we not become attracted by a lump of flesh and blood. The story is told that at one time a man very much attracted to a beautiful woman wooed a woman in such a way that she devised a plan to show him the ingredients of her beauty. The woman made a date to see him, and before seeing him she took a purgative, and that whole day and night she simply passed stool, and she preserved that stool in a pot. The next night when the man came to see her, she appeared very ugly and emaciated. When the man inquired from her about the woman with whom he had an engagement, she replied, "I am that very woman." The man refused to believe her, not knowing that she had lost all her beauty due to the violent purgative that caused her to pass stool day and night. When the man began to argue with her, the woman said that she was not looking beautiful because she was separated from the ingredients of her beauty. When the man asked how she could be so separated, the woman said, "Come on, and I will show you." She then showed him the pot filled with liquid stool and vomit. Thus the man became aware that a beautiful woman is simply a lump of matter composed of blood, stool, urine, and similar other disgusting ingredients. This is the actual fact, but in a state of illusion, man becomes attracted by illusory beauty and becomes a victim of Maya. King Puranjana begged his queen to return to her original beauty. He tried to revive her just as a living entity tries to revive his original consciousness, Krishna consciousness, which is very beautiful. All the beautiful features of the queen could be compared to the beautiful features of Krishna consciousness. When one returns to this original Krishna consciousness, he actually becomes steady and his life becomes successful. Sattvam mukham sudati subhvanuraga bhara vrida vilamba vilasadha sitava lokam nilala kali bhirupaskrita munna samna svanam pradharshaya manasvini valguvakyam. My dear wife, your teeth are very beautifully set, and your attractive features make you appear very thoughtful. Kindly give up your anger, be merciful upon me, and please smile upon me with loving attachment. When I see a smile on your beautiful face, and when I see your hair, which is as beautiful as the color blue, and when I see your raised nose and hear your sweet talk, you will become more beautiful to me, and thus attract me and oblige me. You're my most respected mistress. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripa tamaham vande shri gurum dinatarinam vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Okay, there you have it. This section is, of course, part of a much bigger story. Narada Muni went to visit King Prachinabharishat, and he saw the king being attached and becoming more and more entangled in material life, because he was performing Vedic sacrifices. And so Narada Muni starts telling this story, this allegory of this king who lives in the city and has his queen and, you know, goes hunting in the forest and so on. And of course, the story, Prabhupada mentions at the very beginning when Narada Muni starts telling this story, that this is an allegory. And of course, we only find this out much later in the Bhagavata. The way Narada Muni was telling the story, he was just telling a story of this king Puranjana. And at the end he says, well, actually, what this story means is this and this and this. And in a sense, the story is very appropriate to tell. I don't know if any of these students that took the Kavya course that I teach are here. But if you remember, the poetry was celebrated at the court. It was a courtly activity, and particularly in Sanskrit culture, the most appropriate poetry to recite at a court was the poetry of the love life of the king and how the king fell in love with his queen. And so here you have this story, and we're in this section here where the king returns from his hunt. And he comes home, and his queen seems to be angry with him and seems to be unhappy. And so he's trying to figure out why his queen is unhappy. And here, in this verse, he's asking her that, please, you're so beautiful, and you have such a beautiful face, you have such a beautiful body. And if you remove that anger, and if you smile again to me, and if you speak your sweet words, and if I can see your beautiful face where that is free from anger, your beauty will be even greater, and I will become, as he says in Prabhupada's translation, and thus you will attract me and oblige me. And of course, this is what happens. In the next chapter, we'll read how the king and queen, King Puranjana and his queen, reconcile and engage in amorous affairs. Let's put it like that. But Prabhupada is doing, in this section, in his purports, Prabhupada is looking at the story in two ways. On the one hand, he's looking at the story as the allegory. And the queen, of course, as we've heard much earlier, who is the queen? She's the intelligence. She's the intelligence we all have. And Prabhupada uses the story explains it as the allegory that Narada Muni intended it to be. And then says, well, Puranjana is every one of us, and the queen is our intelligence. And we've earlier talked about the associates of the king, his senses, and so on. But he's also doing something else in this section. And he's also taking the story at its face value, the way King Prachinabharishad heard the story. And so he talks a lot in this section, in these chapters, about marital affairs and about the relationships between husbands and wives, between men and women, between lovers. And so we get both instructions there at the same time. And in a sense, this is very appropriate because the two are, of course, connected. We have the analogy where the queen is the intelligence, and we have the other level where the queen is actually a queen and the king is the king, and they're in love, and Narada Muni is telling their tumultuous love story and how they have fights and how they reconcile and so on. And this is very appropriate because the intelligence is the crucial element here. The queen is the intelligence, but the queen is of course also linked to what the king, in the story, is going through. We come in this world and we have a body. The Bhagavatam says, Deham mano matram idam grihitva, mamaham ityam dadhya manushya. That a man is in this world, has accepted a body, which interestingly says it's mano matram. It consists only of the mind. It's a mental creation. It's the mind produces the body. The desires we have in our mind produces this body. And because we have this body, what comes with it? The andadhya, the blind intelligence, the bewildered intelligence comes with it. And that makes us think, mamaham, this is mine and this is me. I am the doer, I am such and such, I'm an important person, and everything that is in relation to this body, everything that I'm surrounded with belongs to me. And the verse continues that eshoham anyoyam ithibhramena durantapare tamasibhramanti, that because the intelligence is blinded and the intelligent thinks in terms of I and mine, we start thinking eshoham, this is me, anyoyam, this is somebody else, and with this bewilderment we continue to traverse the dark ocean of this world, in the darkness of this world, we continue to roam. And the intelligence is, of course, the cause here. Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita that the intelligence is, when the intelligence is overcome by desires, when the intelligence is overcome by the desire for sense enjoyment, then it starts to identify with the false ego and with the body, and then it gets a mind and it gets the senses. And so our intelligence is blinded at the moment. And so Prabhupada's two levels of the analogy are very appropriate. Purports are very appropriate. We're blinded, our intelligence is blinded, and because of that, we're sort of attracted by the beauty of this world, and particularly, of course, the beauty that we find here at the royal court of King Puranjana, the life of luxury and the life with his queen. And the intelligence should be able to set us free, should be able to deliver us from this. Prabhupada says, intelligence is the power to analyze things in their proper perspective, to be able to see things as they are, to be able to understand what is what. And Krishna explains that intelligence comes in three forms. You have intelligence in the mode of goodness, by which you understand karya karya, what is to be done, what is not to be done, bhaya bhaye, what is to be feared and what is not to be feared, moksham and bandham, liberation or that which sets you free and that which binds you. That is the intelligence in the mode of goodness. The intelligence in the mode of passion, it basically, you're confused. You do not know what is what. You do not know what is dharma, what is adharma. You do not know what you should do, what you should not do. You do not know what you should fear and what you should not fear. And intelligence in the mode of ignorance is even worse than that, because there you think that what you should do is actually what you should not do, and that which you should not do is what you should do. And so you have you're stubborn, and you have this strong conviction that what you're doing is right, but actually you have it all upside down. The reason our intelligence becomes bewildered is because we have desires, because we have lust. Krishna explains that the eternal enemy of the living entity is that lust, is that kama, is that desire for sense enjoyment. And he says that resides in different places in the body, and the highest where it resides is the intelligence. And the intelligence is a seed, has become a seed of lust, and because of it has become a seed of lust, we move through this world looking for sense enjoyment, hoping for sense enjoyment. And of course, this verse here and Prabhupada in his purport talks about beauty a lot. And really, beauty is that it's one of the main things we desire. We like beautiful things. We like beauty. To quote one romantic poet, a thing of beauty is a joy forever. This is the general attitude we have. We like to be surrounded by beautiful things, and we like to be surrounded by beautiful people. Beauty is very powerful. It is as we learn from Parashara Muni, when he defines Bhagavan. What is Bhaga? What is the opulence? And one of them is, of course, Sri. One of them is beauty. And it is an opulence, and it attracts us. And because it attracts us, we want to have a relationship with us. And it's very interesting, actually, that if you ask beautiful people, like really beautiful people, they can tell you that, for example, if they go on a train, people are attracted by them, or they walk into a room, people are attracted by them, and people want to have a relationship with them just because they're beautiful. And beautiful women, of course, are often annoyed by that there's become a magnet for men, because men want to be have that beauty, and sort of feel that because this is beautiful, this is attractive, therefore I am entitled to have a relationship with that, and sort of, or not perhaps entitled, but I have a relationship with that. I'm naturally pulled towards that, and this is the main attraction in this world, the attraction between men and wife, between man and woman. We find, of course, throughout the Bhagavatam, we find descriptions of how a man on the spiritual path should be careful with women, and should sort of not be bewildered by the beauty. And Prabhupada here quotes or refers to this verse from Shankaracharya, which is from the Bhaja Govinda, this stotra he wrote, where he... I won't quote it now. he's basically saying that the breasts of a woman and the nabhidesham, the abode of the navel, which are particularly in Indian clothing, are sort of the navel. I mean, we rarely see the navel, I suppose. But they're the object of attraction for a man. But he says one should know that these are only mangsa. These are only meat. These are only flesh. And he says, manasi vichintya varam varam. One should consider this in one's mind deeply and deeply, again and again. And of course, we might, sometimes women feel a little uncomfortable that the Bhagavatam is so full of descriptions of women, and they're often portrayed negatively as an obstacle on the path. But for men, it is a real difficulty, and it is a real obstacle. And the attraction to females is very strong, and so it is something that we should be wary of. We should be careful with. The other day in the Hinduism course, we were reading the Manusmriti and what he has to say on women, and he has this verse where he says, and one of the students was laughing at it, that he says that a woman does not consider age or beauty, she just thinks he's a man and that is enough. And one may sort of think this is, as the student was laughing about it, that it's disrespectful to women, but from the little understanding I have of the female mind, I think there is some truth in that women tend to be less swayed by beauty than by physical beauty than men are. Men are really captivated by physical beauty, and they do anything for a beautiful woman. For the women, as Manu says, what seems to be more important is he's a man. He's really a person of integrity and of manly qualities, and that is more important for a woman. Perhaps I'm totally off the mark here, but Bhagavati shakes her wise head. And this is for a woman. What is more important is that he's a man of integrity. He's actually a man. He's not a boy. All these reminders we have in the Bhagavatam is to remind us, is to remind the men actually that we should be men. We should become men. And they're reminders for the women that the person we would want to marry should be a man and not a boy. He should be of integrity. He should not be swayed by beauty. He should not be enthralled by the beauty and let that guide his life. As this purport, Prabhupada very graphically describes what that beauty actually is. And of course you have this long story of woman who is very, very intelligent, and this man comes to her, is attracted by her beauty, and she thinks, okay, I'll teach this man a lesson. I'll actually teach him. I'll show him what he's actually attracted to. And so she goes through this whole ordeal to just show how fleeting beauty is and how disgusting beauty actually is in this world. Beauty is ugly here. Beauty is ugly. Today this verse is actually very appropriate. Later we'll have the marriage ceremony for Ramkeshwar Prabhu and Divra Bhakti Mataji. And this verse is very appropriate because it reminds us of why these two people are actually getting married. It reminds us that they're not getting married because they're physically attracted to each other, although that may be there too. But this is not the reason they're getting married. They've understood a long time ago when they became devotees that beauty in this world is ugly. They've realized the emptiness of the beauty here. They've realized that this world is not very attractive, and they were looking for something more. So they turned to Krishna, and they became devotees, and very nice devotees. For all of you who know them, I think you'll agree they're very serious devotees, very determined devotees. And so that was their motivation. And now, today, when we will celebrate their marriage, they continue this. They continue this quest for beauty on a different level. Prabhupada explains here at the very end, he says, King Puranjana begged his queen to return to her original beauty. He tried to revive her just as a living entity tries to revive his original consciousness, Krishna consciousness, which is very beautiful. All the beautiful features of the queen could be compared to the beautiful features of Krishna consciousness. And so the real beauty, Prabhupada is saying, the real beauty that a person can have is Krishna consciousness, is the fact that Krishna, who is the most charming person, the most beautiful person, he appeared in their lives, he appeared in their minds, and he's captured them. And that is the beauty, that is why people are beautiful, really beautiful in this world. And so today we will celebrate this wedding of them, where they've seen the beauty in each other on that level. They've seen the beauty of a committed Krishna conscious life, and they've decided that we want to increase this beauty and we want to continue this beauty by serving Krishna together, by moving forward and dedicating our lives to Krishna, and hopefully with some children as well. That is why this very graphic description that Prabhupada gives here is to remind us of that, is to remind us of why they're actually doing this, and it's to inspire us to say that yes, there is more to life than we often think. Even as devotees, we sometimes get swayed by our senses and by our desires for beauty, but to really understand that there is a deeper beauty here, and that is what we should focus on, and that is what we will celebrate today. I'll end very shortly, but I just want to ask for one thing from all of you. and that is to bless the couple. We all wish them well, of course. We all have good wishes for them, but there's a certain power in vocalizing those wishes. Krishna takes the words, as we read in Shastra, Krishna takes the words of his devotees very seriously. So I want you all today to bless the couple and wish them well, and help them to increase that beauty of Krishna consciousness and to continue on in their life, becoming more and more beautiful. So I'll end here. If there's any questions or comments, I don't want to drag it on too long, because I think they're waiting to decorate this beautiful thing here. So if there's any questions or comments, now's the time. Okay. Very good. So we'll end here, and yes, please bless the couple later, after the wedding perhaps, after the whole thing is over. And Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.